Welcome to Gratitude Space Radio. I'm your host, Chris Palmore, founder of GratitudeSpace.com. My sincere thanks for listening, subscribing, and rating this podcast.
Well, welcome to Gratitude Space Radio. I'm here, and I've got my friends Peter Williams and Tony Verb. They're in Hong Kong, and some moment ago, their camera, there we go. Welcome back. I can, we can do it this way. That's better, right? There we go. Does that look a little better? And then I created these different graphics. I thought we were going to have three people, but, from time to time, maybe I'll flip it up and down. So welcome to Gratitude Space Radio, guys. This is our productive accidents episode. Peter's there, and Tony, they're in Hong Kong. They just had an exciting morning. So you got Peter, you want to introduce your friend to us and me now?
Yeah, sure. So welcome, Tony, to the program.
Thank you.
Verb, all the way from Hungary, living in Hong Kong. And, in true productive accident spirit, we're going to describe kind of how we connected over time and some of the collaborations and some of the projects that Tony is involved in, which is a lot. And we'll also describe how Chris and I stumbled across each other through another series of productive accidents. We're actually here, you might hear a little bit of kitchen noise and cuddling. We're in this local coffee shop tea house. It's kind of like Seinfeld's little deli, that's what I think of it, but it's Hong Kong style. So what is the name of it?
It's a new five dragon congee restaurant.
Yeah, there's dragons involved, so it's got to be good.
Yes.
Yeah. Nice. What do you?
Dragon at the entrance.
So what's the cuisine there? Being obviously I've never been in Hong Kong. Is this local cuisine or is it? What do you?
Very, very local. It's actually called a cha cha tang from in Cantonese, and it virtually means tea house, but it's a diner, so it's a cheap, very honest, straightforward diner for just anyone. Quite frankly, I've seen here fintech superstars, billionaires, and construction workers.
Oh wow!
Basically within 36 hours, and I come here every single morning myself because my home is nearby, my office is nearby, Peter is nearby, so sometimes we catch up here.
Yep.
I catch up here with my most dear friends in Hong Kong.
Yeah, Tony introduced me to this place, and it's become a bit of an institution. It's got these little boots, so it's a little bit unique for Hong Kong. Not that, I guess it's fairly common in the US, like New York has a lot of these sort of style things, but good place to catch up for conversation. We actually start our sometimes motorbike rides from here, and we do a lap of the island, and that's become a little bit of a tradition. Tony recently sold his motorbike, so today we actually plan to ride a little monkey bike, a little Honda Z50 that I parked out on the street here, and a Vespa, but the weather has turned not so good today, so we thought let's just converge on the coffee shop here and sure, we'll go for a ride some other time.
Be monkeyed out.
Yeah. Yeah. But in terms of how this program happened, COVID has obviously slowed down physical interaction and travel and all that, but it hasn't slowed down connecting through digital platforms. Obviously, Zoom has gone off the charts. I was doing a program earlier this year, one of the Seth Godin programs called the Creatives Workshop. And as part of that, it was it helped me finish the book, Productive Accidents. But along the way, I met a couple of hundred people that were also working on other projects, poets, musicians, etc. And along the way, someone mentioned a guy in New York called Chris Shembra, who has a thing called Gratitude and Pasta. Mm. And normally he hosts dinners in his apartment or in his backyard in Chelsea or something in New York. Mm. But because of COVID, he had to pivot towards virtual. And so I reached out to him and said, hey, I know you have this thing, it's called 747 Club. 7:47 refers to the time I think they start boiling the water. 7:47 p.m., get ready for 8 p.m. dinner. And I reached out to him and said, you know what, 7:47 p.m. New York is 7:47 a.m. You have dinner, I have breakfast.
Yeah.
And let's just see if we can, sort of make some magic. I love how we've got the waiter in the background here. And
It's real life.
So he said, yeah, sure, jump on. And yeah, and that first breakfast turned into a bunch of productive accidents. So there were people from all around, you know, a lot of them New York centric, but there were people in San Francisco, a guy who was working in a fintech, a French guy. And we connected on LinkedIn and we started a conversation just off that one dinner experience. And basically, it's a curated conversation around gratitude and how important that is. And he measures your mood on the way in, and people go, you know, I'm feeling a little bit lonely, or I'm feeling a little bit frustrated, a little bit whatever. And then he goes through these conversations around focused on gratitude. And at the end of the session, he measures, you know, how you're feeling now. And people are feeling energetic and optimistic and positive. And so, you know, he's got some actionable, measurable outcomes, which is pretty cool. And this guy I met from one case study that I'll talk about, this French guy in San Francisco, has a fintech called Bunny Money. Yeah, and what he's trying to do is be like a savings platform for millennials and make it a bit more, you know, funky. And one of the things he was doing is partnering with NGOs and helping them do fundraising through their platform. And anyone that chose to donate to an NGO, they would make the transfer fee free compared to the usual, you know, I don't know, PayPal, credit card charges. And I thought, well, I'm on the board of an NGO in New York, you know, Music for Life. Why don't I connect you to, and maybe they could be part of your pilot, you know, several emails and phone calls later. And that's exactly what happened. So that to me was a productive accident that wouldn't have happened if I didn't do that exercise. Then a month later, Chris Schember wrote to me and said, hey, we're doing another series of these dinners. Would you like to join? Here are three dates you can pull from. And I was like, well, okay, well, why don't I attend all three of them and I'll bring a friend each time. So the next one I joined, I brought another Chris, Chris Davis. He's a, I always think of him as my Texan friend living in Taipei. And we also connected through LinkedIn and became good friends. We have a fairly regular call. And he joined one of the dinners and he loved it so much that the following week he decided to volunteer to give a guided walk tour of his neighborhood in Taiwan, Taipei. And so I thought, well, that's a nice little, you know, add-on that wouldn't have happened otherwise. How about I do Hong Kong the following week? So I did a little walk down the escalator into the market and so on. And during that walk, Chris Schembra, the original host, he said, oh, I thought you guys were, you know, the other gratitude guy, Chris Palmore, who we're talking to today, Chris. And Chris Schembra just shot a very brief email saying, hey, Peter, Chris, talk. You know, it's like a one-word introduction.
And I had to read it a couple times. And, yeah, I was gonna say I had to read it a couple times to know what he was even saying. The email, like I had to read it a couple times to even understand what he was talking about. It was so short with so little verbiage involved. It was something like you guys should meet, and he had three names attached to it.
Yes.
So anyways, go ahead.
Yeah, and so Chris and I decided, well, we better follow up with a conversation as usual. You know, what are you working on, you know, what projects and everything else. And by the end of it, we ended up deciding to collaborate on a couple of things. So Chris has discovered gratitude. So I'll get Chris to actually talk about that. Maybe that's a good opportunity for you to talk about how you discovered the benefits of gratitude. And the backstory for me is I've got this 10,000 thank you project that's been going for a while.
You're at 1,045.
I'm up to about 1,300
right now.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
I lost count, sorry.
But yeah, no, that's totally fine. And what's good about that is, you know, you divide 10,000 by 365. It's a 27.4-year project. You can do one of those.
Amazing.
And I'm not keeping up with that. So it's going to take longer, but that's all right. We're all going to 120, right?
Yeah.
So no problem.
Yeah.
So, you know, when I hear someone doing something around gratitude, it's, you know, my ears sort of prick up and I think let's collaborate. So maybe Chris, you want to talk about your journey towards gratitude as well, and then we'll get Tony to do an introduction of himself and how he arrived in Hong Kong, which I think is also an adventure worth learning about.
Thank you for sure.
Thanks. Sure. Yeah. Thanks, Peter. Yeah. You know, I loved the fact that you said, you know, like 10,000 thank yous, you know, and even like AJ Jacobs' book, you know, thanks 1,000. These, you know, repetition and gratitude is such a massive thing. I've got a friend named Molly that wrote for the book, and her, you know, she's been sending out a daily gratitude message to her friends, right? For over 2,000 days consecutively. She's never stopped. She's like, so in her letter in a book, she's like, I'm at 5.64 years of daily gratitude. Like, you know, and she even talks about, you know, the reason I loved her essay, the main reason is she's like, you know, Bruce Lee says that he doesn't fear a man that's practiced 10,000 kicks. He fears a man that's practiced a kick 10,000 times. And her idea was like, what is life going to be like when I do 10,000 days of gratitude? Like, you know, just the consistency. It's like anything, the consistency is so important. If it's just writing something down in the morning or just taking a collective breath and going, I'm grateful, you know, just saying it, right? Just something triggering a moment of gratitude, which can happen anywhere and everywhere, honestly, depending where you're at, you know? I mean, I'm very grateful right now that the three of us can have a conversation like this, a stupid amount, thousands of miles away. I'm meeting so many new. I always have a good time with Peter. You know, and I know that when I'm done with this conversation, I know I'm going to feel better. I felt good, but I'm going to feel better. I'm going to be more excited too. I get that every time with Peter because collaboration is key, you know, and I know Tony from reading Tony's bio on LinkedIn. I know that he's about collaboration and that he's into a lot of things and mixing it up with people. So anyways, my gratitude story started, the fall of 2013, I decided that I was going to write a gratitude letter to my mother on my birthday. I just wanted to celebrate her. It was just a thought process that came to me through another podcaster, Adam Carolla, you know, made a statement about how birthdays are like appreciation trophies. And if everyone gets one, how is that really special? So his whole thing was, you know, make it about something else or make it about an achievement. So I just decided I'd make it about my mother. And the day of my birthday, I got up really early and I wrote her essentially, you know, you guys will appreciate this. My editor's like, you can't call it a letter because the beginning, it's like a letter, but then there's like this self, like, fulfill, you know, like then I'm like talking in the third person. Anyways, she's like, you got to say it's a note. It's a message. Okay. It was a message to my mother. Anyways, that you got. I always think about that. She's like, it's not a letter because of the way it's formatted. Anyways,
maybe it was a manifesto.
Oh, there you go. There we go. Maybe that sounds much more exciting, right? I got up. I wrote a manifesto to my mother. I put it on Facebook because I wanted her to find it. That does sound a lot more exciting. I'll have to run that by Nusha and see if she's okay with that verbiage. Not that she watches everything, but
and it's got alliteration. You know, it's got to work.
Yeah, it should. You're right. It is a manifesto. You're right. It's talking about where I'm at, and it's describing in the coming years. It said, you know, I'm going to tell you I love you more often. I'm going to spend more time with you. I'm going to make you more proud. You know, so I put that on my Facebook page. I went about my day, and I normally get a call from my parents, and I didn't get my normal birthday call with them singing to me. I let a little more time go by, and I called my dad, and I got him on the phone. He said, happy birthday. And then I said, thank you. And I said, did mom read the letter? And he said that she had read it and that she needed time with it, that she couldn't talk to me. And to give Tony a little backstory, you know, I'm very close with my mother. She's somebody I would have talked to the day before. You know, somebody I've told, you know, from a very young age, I had no problem saying I love you and kissing her on the cheek in public. So when I heard that she needed time with it and she couldn't talk to me, that had never happened in my entire life for anything. So it was a very astute moment that me doing something very simplistic and having this outcome that I could have never gotten. So, you know, we met later that day and we talked and we built this connection and it was a very powerful moment. But the amazing thing about being grateful and appreciating these moments are later when things happen, those moments, you know, become more, right? It's like you have this moment, but what happened next is what really is why we're here today. You know, 4 months to the day later, my mom passed away in hospice care. Her cancer had come back, and it was April 30th. So it was 4 months from December 30th. And I obviously didn't, none of that. My mom was in remission for over 10 years and that just all happened. And it really made me take a pause and you know, the next iteration of it, it made me realize, like I said, that when you share gratitude and you make it something that's tangible, and I mean tangible, like it's a video or if it's a piece of paper. It's something that can be seen, right? It's not just an echoes, right? It has a place, you know. It has a physical presence. That's Alexa in the other room talking to me, which doesn't make any sense. Sorry about that. Anyway, so some trigger word I said. So what I was going to say, Tony, is, you know, the amazing thing is with making what I consider like gratitude art is that, you know, it stacks. So the cool thing is like I had a moment with this letter, right? And then my mom had a moment with this letter. My dad had a moment with this letter. My sister had a moment with this letter. My mom's friends had a moment with the letter. All these things happened, right? And then in which, like I said, they're all different memories happening because somebody decided to be the grateful in a public place. So what happened next is I had a whole new moment with this letter, right? My dad asked me, do you want to speak at the funeral? And I said that I didn't, but I kept thinking about this letter, right? I kept thinking about what this letter did and how it brought us close together. It was something that when you're that close, 35 years, right? Like what could you do at that point? You know what I mean? Like there was nothing, but then there was this letter. So I had my cousin read the letter at my mom's funeral, basically to me. So now I had a whole other experience with this letter, right? I'm sitting at my mom's funeral. I'm hearing somebody else say the words, I'm going to tell you I love you more often. I'm going to spend more time with you. I'm going to make you more proud. And it gave me a massive pause because it was a bittersweet thing, right? It was one is, you know, I was very happy I did that because doing it later would not have meant anything. But two, all those promises I made, the year was over. April 30th, this next year, you know, it was over. So basically, that's kind of where my gratitude story started. You know, the following year, I wrote a letter to my father. It was a very different letter, but I had the same type of connection, just speaking in gratitude. I made it public, and it created a moment. And that's, again, the great thing about gratitude is you're really creating a moment. And if you can write it down or make it something that you can reflect on, it can live forever, that moment. And the cool thing about it is specifically that moment's living right now, right? I just told you about it. If I hadn't wrote that letter to my mom, we wouldn't be talking. I wouldn't be zooming in or, you know, into Hong Kong with you guys. I never would have met Peter. I wouldn't have met Tony, you know, but so basically, you know, just to cap off the rest of my story, because I want to get to Tony here, is, you know, basically after I had the second experience with my father, I asked myself the question, can I initiate other people to have this experience? And it's been a really long 5 years of continually asking myself, how can I do that? What's the easiest way to do it? What am I doing there? And how can I do it best? So, you know, from that, I launched a website. So I initiated letters of gratitude from people, fulfilling like what I was doing with my mother, getting letters. From there, I did videos. I crossed the country getting videos because I realized that that moment could be captured like that, opposed to having somebody write. Like I could get what I want, right? I could create the moment in a video. If I ask you what you're grateful for, which I will, Tony, later here, we'll get to that. I get to create the moment and it's captured, you know, and they're from long form interviews and then to the podcast and to the nonprofit doing gratitude pop-ups to this podcast here. So in my book that Peter's a part of, that's coming out next week. So I'm continually working on new ways to initiate people into a grateful state. So there's my rant. So thank you for listening, guys. I hope you could hear me. I know it's a little louder there.
Yeah, no, it's fun. We can hear you totally.
Yeah, fine. Perfect, perfect. And we heard it all, and we are. I am very grateful for, you know, being shared your story too, one-on-one or one-on-two. it's truly, truly inspiring. And, thank you.
Oh, you're welcome, Tony. Well, go ahead, Peter.
I'm just thinking of some of the projects that you can talk about later. They are, in fact, an expression of gratitude. You know, for instance, the Help It documentary and other things that I'm sure we'll talk about. So maybe we can shift towards that. But even your idea of you know, recognizing that our birthday should not necessarily be a day for receiving; it should be a day for giving. That was powerful. So that inspired me to give gifts on my birthday to my parents. And my dad now wears a pair of Vans, black and white checkered slip-on shoes. My mum has a Vans checkered scarf, you know, and that's kind of fun, you know, like that wouldn't have happened unless we met. And then I think your little pop-up videos, you know how sometimes they do weddings and things like that, you have people going into a booth and having funny photos with props. Chris's idea is, why don't you get people to go into a booth and video record what they're grateful for, which to me is a little bit more meaningful. And I think you're targeting to have 10,000 videos, which is kind of a throwback to 10,000 thank yous as well. So all these little projects overlap and keep on expanding and evolving, which is kind of fun. So I want to ask Tony about how the hell did you get to Hong Kong? What was the trigger for that? And what have you done over the last, you've been here how many years?
Almost 10.
So pretty much similar to me. We arrived about the same time.
Yeah.
All right, over to you.
Well, first of all, you know, obviously Peter and I know each other pretty well. So Chris and I don't know each other at all.
Yeah.
So right. On the LinkedIn bio, Chris, you probably don't know much about me. So it's a very interesting setup because Peter deliberately didn't brief me about this conversation, which I like. And obviously, I would like to make this conversation meaningful for us. We should open a new layer, you know, in our conversations.
Of course.
And obviously, still kind of deliver an introduction that is meaningful to you, Chris. So I will be on brand, and we'll talk about the gratitude, and perhaps highlight a couple of aspects in my life that you also might not know about. Definitely not Chris. So. Just as a 1 minute intro, really, because it's not really be worth more. The story indeed starts in Hungary. I was born in Budapest, and at 12 year of age, I was actually in a moment. Okay, this will be a longer version.
No, let's go for
2 minutes.
You've got plenty of time.
Two minutes.
We're good. No rush, man.
Cool. So at 12, I somehow realized that my future was not in Hungary. I had to go and explore the world, and my drive became to just see the world. And somehow I made a commitment to myself at the age of 12 that I will do as many things as possible and will live in as many places as possible before I turn 30. Because I had a theory, I was a very observant kid, that around 30, people get stuck in their mind and in their lives, and they stop progressing. So I didn't know whether this was a biological reality, but I assumed it was. And if it was, then I wanted to get stuck very far away from where I was. So that's why I was pushing. So I ended up living in Singapore like 14 years ago, and that was my introduction to Asia, and that led me later to Hong Kong. And the moment I arrived to Hong Kong, I fell in love with the city. And basically, I moved here 10 years ago. Long story short,
I didn't realize you were in Singapore, so we had overlap there as well.
We
were Singapore for 9.
I remember
you were there for 4.
Yeah, I was not there for 4, I was there for about a year.
Okay,
and I still went back to Europe. Anyway, the long story is that Hong Kong is my short story, the short version of the long story that Hong Kong is my city number 10. And I must say that my gratitude story started with the city, because I was actually, I'm 36 now, so I moved here when I was 26, 7. The process started when I was 26, ended when I was 27, and I had an opportunity to actually move to Shanghai into a very, very good, promising position. And on the other hand, I was facing uncertainty. Entrepreneurial uncertainty in Hong Kong, and obviously, if I stuck with the original plan that I made it at 12, I would have gone to Shanghai to push the boundaries, explore the horizon. But something kept me in Hong Kong, and I was not in a relationship. I didn't have anything to stay for, but something told me that my destiny was to stay in Hong Kong. And since then, I don't have the space to actually share why it has proven to be true, but it has proven to be true. I found everything here that I've been looking for and beyond in my life. So then the gratitude, I think, probably starts with the realization that you must appreciate where you are,
mm-hmm.
and the people that are around you, and the person that you are in the context and in the environment where you are.
Yeah.
And because I think, you know, the drive to just go and push and change and explore partly comes from a position of no gratitude. I was very grateful and excited about life. And I'm a big big believer of celebrating everything in life and being open-minded. That's why I found home and good friends and love and adventure everywhere I went to. But at the same time, it has a negative aspect to it, that you're not appreciating what you actually have in the moment or the moment before as much, because you're always hoping and pushing for something new and better and better and better. Yeah. And in Hong Kong, I kind of drew that line that this is a city I'm grateful for, you know, and everything that has happened to me, so much so that I want to A, give back, B, you know, get deeper in the thing. So I will share you a couple of snippets of gratitude in my Hong Kong life, and very much relating to your experience and story, Chris. I think it's very important to add that until I moved to Hong Kong, my base was always Budapest. I moved to other cities, but I never changed my headquarters. The idea was not that I was moving away. I was always about to go back. And with Hong Kong, it was different. I made a permanent move, and everyone knew that. My family knew that. And the first Christmas when I went back to Budapest, thinking what I should give to my family members, I decided that I will give everyone a letter. We can call it a gratitude letter. I didn't actually have that awareness of the gratitude letter, but I just wanted to write everyone a letter telling them what they meant to me and why I thought they were awesome, and also in some cases also telling them some of the truth that we did not exchange before. And that obviously resulted in very similar responses and reactions that you expect, obviously, and you experience, Chris. You know, it made a fundamental difference in our relationships. And that built a kind of foundation that I feel is important or was necessary to maintain a very strong and build a very strong relationship, even with one decade of distance. And that was so significant that I just kept, once again, not being entirely aware of the power of gratitude scientifically or consciously, but experimentally, yes. So I started to further come up with various projects and acts of gratitude. And I would like to highlight two. One is a project that Peter was a significant part of. When I turned 30, and it was about a year after I made my commitment to Hong Kong, I also decided to shift industries from the creative industries to technology, innovation, and venture capital. And in the transition, I also decided, and you know, that was a big moment. Now you know the backstory, that until 30, I wanted to do as many things as possible. And then when I turned 30, I remember the day. It was not my 30th birthday, but sometime during that year, I was sitting in a taxi in Hong Kong and watching the skyline passing by. And I asked myself, what the heck am I doing here? Mm-hmm. And then, what the heck am I doing here was a question, what should I do now? Because until now, I had one dogma or one rule in life, just to keep pushing. Okay, what do I do with all this experience? And where is my purpose? Because actually, I realized at that moment that I lived my life without purpose. My only purpose was to just go. So that I decided to do a half year. It was a half year long journey around the world and also in Hong Kong. I just made one. I had two goals during those half year, during that half year period. One is to cleanse myself of everything. Cleanse myself of everything that was kind of piled up in this kind of unpurposeful life story. And the second was to do a project that was absolutely not about me. And basically that became the first project in my life that was nothing to do with me. And that became the Helper documentary, which is basically about maternal sacrifice, the maternal sacrifice that the domestic helpers around the world, but in particular in this documentary, featured by and through the stories of Hong Kong-based, mostly Filipino and Indonesian domestic helpers make for their children that they leave behind in their in their home countries, which is significant. And it's a phenomenon that I encountered during my very first weeks in Hong Kong, just like most people who arrive here. I'm not sure whether you've been to Hong Kong, Chris, but on every Sunday, tens of thousands of domestic helpers on their free day do various activities in the city center. Since Hong Kong is very dense and there's very few parks in the city center and non-public spaces are actually very expensive to enjoy, the ladies end up camping and picnicking in along the streets of the city, and they are having fun. But it's a phenomenon, and when you first see that, you don't know what it is. So I went to have a conversation with them. What's going on? Is this a festival? And then I learned what it is, and I had more conversations. And I realized in the process how amazing human beings they are, or there are amongst them, and how little appreciation they get in this society. So I wanted to contribute to change perception on that front, and basically with my partner in that project, John Powers, we ended up crowdfunding for a documentary, and Peter was a big supporter and catalyst in that process, and I'm forever grateful for that contribution and the attitude that you represent, and I think it's exemplary. But basically, we raised in the end almost $90,000, produced the documentary, it got into cinemas, and you know, we know stories through which we know that it actually made a difference in many people's lives. And that was the most rewarding experience in my entire life, most rewarding project in my entire life. And I will add one more, perhaps, okay, two more gratitude-related, you know, snippets. Another one, which is also very dear to my heart, I'm sure you will empathize it or will relate to this, Chris, based on the story that you shared about you know, your letter to your mom and the funeral experience. Because I couldn't go back to my stepfather's funeral for various reasons, and it doesn't really matter why. Basically. He was a Hungarian, big Hungarian man with a mustache, and was listening exclusively to reggae music all his life, Bob Marley and so on. So for every single family outings, we were just listening to reggae, and that somehow became part of my, you know, part of my psyche and biology. And so reggae music is pumping in my heart, and quite frankly, for the longest time, I actually didn't even care about reggae music. It was just there, and it took me a while to appreciate how much I loved it, and it took me a while to appreciate him for bringing reggae music into my life. And long story short, since I was in the creative industries and organizing parties and festivals and so on, the way I wanted to celebrate his life, for me, funerals are not about mourning death, but celebrating lives. That's how I usually approach life and death and these moments. So I organized a very big beach reggae party on a Sunday afternoon that I named after him. So his name, if you translate it into English, is George Lucas. it became the George Lucas Reggae Series. And on Sunday afternoons for I think about a year or 1.5 years, we were organizing some very, very cool reggae parties. I didn't share this story with everyone because it's very intimate. So since it's George Lucas and I like Star Wars, it was actually a Star Wars themed reggae party series. The irony here is that that my stepfather didn't like Star Wars at all. But that's another, you know, it's another quirk in the story. So, you know. That was actually, I know that it meant for my mom way more than me flying back and just standing, you know, in the cemetery together. It was a worthwhile celebration of a life. So, and I think, you know, a third or a probably last snippet, and then we can just talk about anything. The last snippet was, I think started about 3-4 years ago, where I became much more conscious after all these experiences about the power of gratitude. Mm. And once again, I didn't read about it. I wasn't actively looking for it. It was more gathering the positive experiences of my activity and actions of gratitude. And every single end of the year, it's not Christmas, but end of the year, I write 10 letters of gratitude to the people that I'm most grateful for or had the biggest impact in my life that year, and whoever they are, and even if they barely know me, and they don't even know that their small act made a big difference, I'm actually writing that down to them.
Beautiful.
And that obviously is pure magic.
Yeah.
As we know that. And yes, quite frankly, I just proposed to my. I don't know how to say this, but my ex-girlfriend, because she's not my fiancée.
I'm going to bring that up. You're both actually engaged.
Yeah.
And in fact, I think
you're engaged, Chris.
Getting married.
Yeah, I'm getting Wednesday, married in, Wednesday. Was it 4 days? No, 5 days. 5 days.
That's amazing.
Congratulations, Tony.
Good luck.
So congratulations to both of you.
Thank you.
You know, the good thing about Tony's film experience is that he got to do an amazing proposal. And maybe just talk us through the amount of preparation for that.
I will.
That was brilliant.
Yeah. And I think how I would like to wrap that in is just express some gratitude to my fiance, Natalie, because it is that she is extremely aware of the power of gratitude and very conscious and very active about it. So since I met her 5 years ago, my consciousness around the phenomenon has increased dramatically. So as I was doing it purely by experience and instinctly, since I met her, it has become a very
more intentional
and intentional part of my life and our life, and I'm extremely grateful to be with someone who's like that, and I'm extremely happy to be in a relationship where both people have this kind of awareness. And we and thanks to her, we have gone through some real magic, or I have gone through some or experienced real magic because of her relentless commitment to gratitude and positivity. So
that's great. You're making figuring a few of these. So you guys are about to start, you know, the official part of your relationship.
Life. But, on life.
You know, Catherine and I, so my wife, we're about to celebrate our 25th wedding anniversary, which seems bizarre, you know, like we got married when I was 25. So this year has been a big year in terms of milestones, right? So 50 a month or so ago, 25th wedding anniversary coming up on the 2nd of December. It just so happens to be John Wood's Powered by Purpose breakfast that morning. So that seems appropriate. You know, let's power this relationship to another level. And, you know, so I can only wish you guys the best for both of your futures together. I know Natalie and she's amazing. I haven't met your fiance yet, Chris.
But
One day you're going to come and stay with us in Hong Kong, maybe as part of the extended honeymoon. And, you know, we have this tradition of welcoming people into our lives. But I want to backtrack.
And we'll come to this coffee shop, okay?
Of course.
For sure.
You can already
see it. It's happening.
It's a date, the three of us.
We could do the wedding with... The Hong Kong wedding reception could be right here.
Exactly.
We'll have speeches.
It will be cheap.
It's going to be good. But I met Tony. This is another little story of productive accidents. I discovered this whole...
Sorry, I'm going to order one more.
Yeah, go for it. Would you like a tea, Chris?
I wish.
I'm going to order for you, Chris, and I will drink it on your behalf.
You drink it for me? Yes, please. Please.
Okay. We'll tell you how we
get yourself something you like, please.
The other thing, how did I meet Tony? So
I always forget.
No, I remember. So when I first moved to Hong Kong, like I finished business school, and I, you know, this idea around productive accidents was in my head. Okay. I started to get involved with TEDx. Then I went to one of the first people I met was Alison Baum. She was bringing General Assembly to Hong Kong, and she was doing, you know, sort of like night school for startups. One event per month, and then it was per fortnight, then a week and per night. And one of the events I went to was Mush Panjwani. I don't know if you've ever met him, but he gave a talk on the essence of being an entrepreneur. And in his case, he'd been made redundant at a fairly senior age, and he was actually very good at what he did. But he's such a positive guy that he said, well, you know what? I always said I was going to turn those blogs that I'd written into a book. Why don't I just do it now,
you, Chris,
rather than three years from
thank
now?
Thank you.
That's an iced milk tea. Yeah, a bit of a specialty here. And I went along to this talk because, you know, I was curious about what he had to say about entrepreneurship. And one of the things he said was, you know, look, how do you maintain your perspective when you leave a big company and you're trying to do your own thing? You don't have this infrastructure around you. And one of the things he said was, look, if you can have a shower with fresh running water, you're already better off than 80% of the people on the planet. You know, so maintaining that perspective and that humility, that gratitude was one important thing. And the other thing that he taught me was, look, if you want to write a book, what you do is you reverse engineer it. You say, look, it's going to be 100 pages long and I want to finish it in 100 days. So by definition, that means you need to do one page per day. And I thought, well, you know, even though I'm working a full-time job, maybe I could break that down into a page a day. And so in honor of him, I did eventually self-publish a book. During that process, and it was literally 100 pages long, I discovered a collaborator who is a musician in Melbourne. And it turns out that her father was born in Macau, which is very close to Hong Kong. And I thought, wouldn't it be cool if... And she said, oh, I'd never been to Hong Kong. And I said, well, you're a musician. You've got an album. There's a music festival here called Flock and Flap. Wouldn't it be cool if we could get you to come up here and perform? That would be, you know, another productive accident. And so Gino Yu, who we had on the program a couple of weeks ago, connected me to Tony. Tony was at the time doing marketing for Flock and Flap Music Festival. So Flock and Flap is kind of like Coachella, Lollapalooza in the US. And we connected. I think we spoke for about only 15 minutes, but within that time, we came up with probably 10 things that we should be collaborating on. And we've just continued.
I think Peter came up with 10 things.
Between
and I said yes to all of them.
But, you know, it's all about the mindset. And 6 months later, you know, Tony connected me to Justin Sweeting, who's a talent scout for Clock and Flap. Justin's become a great friend. And
He's the co-founder and the music director. We are more than a music scout.
Yes. He does a lot of good things. And he's just got a series of children's books, I've just noticed, about the birds and the bees, which is quite entertaining. Yeah. And so 6 months later, this musician, Jess Ribeiro, came up from Melbourne, stayed with us and performed, which was incredible. Another chapter in another book one day. And then when Tony and Joanna finished the Hopper documentary, they took it sort of on a roadshow around Hong Kong. And one of the first speaking events that I went to related to it was at Creative Mornings. And that's one of my favorite platforms ever since, because I walked into that room, there were 100 people in there, and I did have a pretty good network. I didn't recognize anybody because it was all designers, architects, advertising people, and I'm in the finance industry, so it's, you know, probably no surprise there wasn't an overlap. But your word that month was action. So I think you spoke about lights, camera, action. Ever since then, I've been going to Creative Mornings. So that's probably, I don't know, many years. And I spoke there in February, which was amazing, which was kind of like the spoken word version of productive accidents. But all of these adventures keep on evolving. And then Pekka Kucha or Pekacha, Joanna, Pekka Kucha, whatever. Joanna spoke, and that's how I discovered that, you know, and I've been going to that. And I spoke at one of those eventually as well. So all of these little experiences keep on compounding, and which is one of my,
you know, how I first spoke at Pekka Kucha, and then why Joanna spoke at Pekka Kucha. It's crazy.
Yeah.
That's, and we, you know, the list of names we can be grateful for, for all these accidents and all this magic is endless.
Yes.
And I think that's part of the awareness and that we need to have. And I think that's why your philosophy and your platform, Chris, makes so much sense. And 10,000, you know,
thank yous,
because there is more than 10,000 people and acts and moments to be grateful and thankful for.
Yeah,
that were significantly changing our lives.
And the other thing it does is builds resilience. Like 25 years of marriage is not going to be, you know, all upside, right? There's going to be challenging times, but it gives you this framework of resilience that you go, well, look, you know, if you don't actually have difficult times, then you don't actually know what happiness is either, because you don't know, you know, you can't distinguish it. So, you know, I don't want too many bumps in your roads, but, you know, don't be too concerned if there are some, you know, for both of you. Thanks. In your marriage bliss. That's going to be coming up.
So you're wishing us a lot of bumps on our...
Just some, to keep it real.
It will come anyway, I'm sure. Thank you. Chris, are you still there?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. So do you want to go into your series of questions maybe? Or you got any other questions you want to go into?
Well, I wanted to tell Tony I really appreciated everything he said. I was you gave me so much. There was so much I didn't want to stop you. You had so much good stuff going on. I totally want to see your documentary. And if I understood correctly, you were basically highlighting these people these professionals that were helping others in kind acts, right? With whatever. Okay. So I just want to tell you, you know, that
they're live-in domestic workers. So for instance, in my case, Ivy David has lived with us for 15 years. She was with us in Singapore. She's looked after our four children. There's no way that Catherine and I would both be working. There's no way we'd have four children. There's no way we'd be living this crazy life without their contribution. And what I loved about the Helper documentary was amplifying appreciation for their sacrifice, which is not something that Hong Kong is famous for. And so it's shown a spotlight on that, and not just in Hong Kong, but across Asia. So amazing. And, you know, yeah, thank you for putting that together. It's incredible.
Thank you for contributing.
For sure.
Chris, I will send you a link.
Oh, definitely. I'd appreciate that. And what I was going to say is, you know, I was talking last week. It's always nice to say what you're grateful for, but it's to me the most powerful thing is to be a catalyst for gratitude. So you're the person that takes care of your family. Like, she's so kind to you all. You know, that's you. So basically, if kindness is a catalyst for gratitude, and what you've done, Tony, in your documentary is you're highlighting these people that are taking care of these families. So you're highlighting their kindness and how they care for others, you know?
Yeah.
So what you're doing there in your documentary is totally being a catalyst for gratitude, because you're sharing these stories, these people, because they're real people that care and take care of these families. So I think so when you said that, you know, your documentary was something you're grateful for, I see the gratitude plastered all over that idea. And I love it. I think it's beautiful. I think there's more, you know, we need more stories like that. You know that, right? I'm preaching to the choir. Like, there can never be enough stories of good people doing good things, right?
Thankfully, we have a lot of people doing that. And I think just once, I'm telling this to people watching this show, and if you ever wondered, it makes sense to... Oh, so he wanted to kick us out. If you ever wondered that it's worthwhile to put a lot of energy in gratitude and kindness, I can tell you that nothing was more rewarding in my life, and got more gifts from people of all sorts than in the wake of this project. And for that reason, actually, just to add this layer, I decided that was my first ever feature film that I produced. Mm-hmm. I never learned filmmaking, to be honest, but I then decided to keep that in my life and try to produce as many social impact positive films and documentaries in my life as much as I can. I have a target to do one every 2 years. I'm really falling behind on that target. But I'm working on two projects right now, so hopefully I can come out with something very soon again, because media, and we are producing right now media is a platform, is a tool to actually catalyze, to scale gratitude and positivity and kindness in the world. So
even a documentary about gratitude would be kind of a fun idea one day. You never know.
Well, I mean,
you'd be interested in a documentary about gratitude, Chris?
Yeah, you know, the funny thing is I actually, I took a tour for 3 years ago. It's called the Punching Depression Tour. Okay, so I got in a car. I drove to Chicago with my dad. I got to see my favorite band, U2. And then I got on a train and I crossed the entire country to Seattle. Okay. So that so what happened was, and the tour is, I met with groups in Seattle, collected videos, did document, you know, I was filming basically like a mock doc. I was interviewing people about Gratitude. Did that in Seattle, went down to San Francisco and Oakland, did it post places there, went down to Los Angeles, did it there, and I did it in Las Vegas. So what I'm telling you is, actually, I was talking with somebody last week on my podcast. I already have everything. So there's the storyline, right? And I have all the videos that place me with people in all these cities. So I would love to, at some point, and maybe it's not you, maybe we could just talk about it just idea-wise. Honestly, all that would need to be done is somebody have a little bit of an eye for it and then have me be interviewed, and everything's already filmed because I have digital content. I have 100 and something videos with different people. I've got tons of videos of people talking about Gratitude in the entire thing. And then you have me, you know what I mean? And you can place me in these places. Yeah. That's the story. And honestly, that's the idea for my second book that I'm planning on starting. That was my idea. It's like, my first book, I initiated people to share Gratitude essays with Peter and a bunch of people. So my book has my story, but my whole thing is everybody else's story. That's my story, is everybody else's story, because that's what Gratitude is. So the cool thing about the second book is everything's already, all the stories are there. I just have to shorthand the, you know, I mean, like, as far as the book wise, it's like, I know exactly what happened. Everything's documented. I have all the videos, the conversations, like, it's, so I'm excited about getting into that. But at the same time, I'd love to just talk about collaboration or possibly trying to do something with that, because it's all there already. You know what I mean? And it's not bad footage. I was using a GoPro. It's just more about, where's the vision? What do we cut into? I totally would love to converse with either one of you guys about the idea.
We have a mutual friend, Adrian Bellick, that we're going to get on the program at some stage. I've probably mentioned him already on a previous episode. But he couch surfed around the world for 3 years making a documentary about happiness. So he knows how to put things together.
Yeah.
And that's a great storyteller, and he's a great friend of ours. Again, he's one of the guys that Gino introduced me to probably you as well.
You introduced
him. Yeah, anyway, an amazing guy. He's in the Philippines right now. Yep. He's stuck there with COVID, but he's quarantined right now.
Yep.
Anyway, but yeah, we'll bring him into the loop for sure. And that could be a subsequent interview. You know, we could brainstorm in real time around this. Zero preparation. Let's just see where it goes. Anyway, lots of magic on the horizon. Do you want to go into your questions for Tony?
Yeah. So Tony, I'm going to ask you a question. I'm going to ask it a couple times, but I just want you to give me one name. It's a different name every time. Okay. You got
every
the premise?
Time? Okay.
It's going to be a different name. Okay. So when I say the words, somebody in your life you're grateful for, who popped in your head? What's the one name?
Someone that, what, sorry.
Someone in your life you're grateful
simply,
for.
Yeah. In general, in life.
Yes.
Mom is top of mind.
Okay. I'm going to ask you again now, another time. Someone in your life you're grateful for.
My older sister is top of mind.
Okay. Now, we'll do it again. Someone in your life you're grateful for.
My grandmother in Budapest is top of mind.
Okay. I want to go with, so I was just asking that because people have go-tos, and don't get me wrong, go-tos are great, but the more time you ask, it becomes more, not go-to, it becomes more like, oh, I just thought of this. So I want to hear about your grandma. Tell me some reasons why your grandma popped in your head this moment.
She is simply the most wonderful person on earth for me, full stop. And she's one of those people, whoever she needs, just generates love and kindness and respect. She's a pretty small lady in stature, extremely powerful in aura and charisma.
Awesome.
But all positive and just filled with love.
Has she been to Hong Kong?
No, she has not.
Would she travel?
No, not anymore. She's very sick, unfortunately. Wow, she's still with us, but she's fighting she's been fighting for a couple of years. So unfortunately she wasn't even in a state to travel, but she had the spirit of traveling. She was COO of a very large stained stone textile company back in during socialist Hungarian times. So she's a real leader type person, but once again, leader with love, and not a person that anyone would say anything negative about. So, you know, that she's really my role model in terms of how to treat people well, but generate respect.
What's an example of how she treated? What's an example of how she treated people well?
It's impossible for me to say. She's someone you don't hear anything negative from about anyone, whilst being extremely firm on her beliefs, values, and just action. Action speaks for her. Extremely resilient. I mean, I'm one of those previous generation great people, and I think even that kind of greatness and firmness is something that's missing from my generation more.
If we were going to ask you one more time, but there's a constraint, you're not allowed to mention a relative.
Yeah.
Who's the first person that comes to mind?
You know? You.
Yeah, no, I don't.
Hold on, that's not in the room. That's not in the room. That's not in the cafe.
It has to be Natalie.
But that's almost family.
It's almost family.
Yeah, beyond family.
He's really wanting to get you someone to pop in, bro. He just wants something to pop in.
this is very funny because Gino pops up.
Okay.
Very, unexpectedly, but not unexpectedly.
Yeah.
Obviously the context sets the tone, and Gino is someone we share experiences with.
Yeah.
And the mutual friend, and definitely Gino. Gino has, and you welcomed him at your show, Chris. He's all about consciousness, and he's been all about consciousness for ever since I've known him, probably for a very long time. And I think he has only one. He has a lot of goals in life, but I think the core goal is to spread the idea of consciousness, and he's achieving that. And I think throughout our encounters, he definitely made me more conscious about consciousness, and it definitely led me to on a better path, or definitely on a different path. And since I'm a very grateful person for the life I have, and I never really be back, I'm grateful for the path, and he's been definitely part of that path.
Yeah, and so, he talks about joy as well, right? If you're in the moment and you're alive, then what else is there to be worried about or anything like that? So yeah, he's a super connector, that's for sure.
Peter, I was just going to say that Tony, I liked how you fell on Gino because Peter's your really good friend. You're sitting with Peter, so the amazing thing is, it's like you could specifically go to Gino because Gino introduced you. Like without Gino, there's no you and Peter, right? Am I right about that?
There's no this, exactly.
There's another triangle.
Yeah, there's none of it. So, I mean, the layered gratitude. It's like you, obviously, you're good friends with Peter and you are grateful for Peter, but you're so grateful for Gino, right? Without Gino, there's no Peter. there's so much.
That's also how it went with the family. Why did the family come about? Because being grateful for life, who can you thank your life for? Mostly your mother. Yeah. And then, the grandmother is her mother. And my sister was my first friend, right? And we are still very, very good friends. Very, very probably my best friend. And I am her. So, these are the people that you need to be there. Mm-hmm. And for me, it was just top of mind. I didn't even think about this, but I think it's obvious. And Peter was very, very organic as well, just being grateful for the moment and enjoying and celebrating joy and be thankful to Gino.
Yes.
And it's beautiful because he's teaching all of this as well. So, wow. Okay. He would be so proud.
Yeah.
Let's show this to him.
Yeah, we will. We'll send him the link.
Thanks, Gino.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, good work, Gino.
Yeah. Keep going.
Yeah. Even when he came to the House of Beautiful Business, actually, Chris –
did a session on gratitude for that as well on the Sunday morning, I think it was, our time.
Yeah, it was Sunday morning,
And Gino jumped on there, and Gino throughout that whole weekend was he didn't present, but he was there saying, "Oh yeah, I need to introduce you guys."
For a couple of hours,
you know, and it was
he was doing his thing, and it was beautiful.
That's his specialty. And I ended up speaking at one of his events up at Kadoorie Center a few weeks ago. That was fun too, with Peter Dingle and so on.
Cool.
So lots of magic keeps on happening. The more you're alert to this stuff, the more you see it everywhere. Right? So that's the benefit.
Yeah, well, I know we're coming to the end of our time here. You know, I was something you and I haven't been doing, Peter, is we haven't allowed the guests just to kind of speak. Is there any project you'd like to just share to anybody hearing this and stuff they can check out or anything? You know, like you have your documentary, right? So we definitely want to put the documentary somewhere in the show notes, right? So people can at least find that.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Yes, let me just share in 1 minute the project I'm working on right now.
Yeah.
And I'm really careful how much I'm sharing about that because A, I don't want to jinx it. B, I'm working on this with a couple of people, but not yet, you know, officially, so to say. But I will share this. So if you guys have anyone in mind, and I think I shared this actually at the House of Beautiful Business already. So. So just for your reference and for the viewers' reference, we are working on a documentary about poverty. And one of the reasons is that we feel, I felt that during the pandemic, people became very obsessed about their own lives. For the better and worse, actually, I do think that the COVID-19 has catalyzed a lot of gratitude, actually. And the consciousness around what really matters in life. So I see it around me, you know, through a lot of conversations, people started to appreciate more their, you know, their families, their loved ones, you know, friendships, and started to nurture them more, and became less materialistic. But at the same time, there are, according to the Economist estimates, 250 to 300 million people falling below the poverty line this year or by the end of this year. And it's not that there's no awareness about this because the Economist put this on its front page, but I quite frankly don't hear anyone really talking about this or even doing anything about this. Because we are very concerned from a macroeconomic perspective on, you know, like major industries just falling apart. And that is indeed top of mind because ultimately those are the industries that generate jobs, and the, you know, jobs will be the only catalyst for, you know, diminishing the number of people below the line. Long story short, I just felt that this is a good moment and an important moment to talk about poverty. And I stumbled upon, basically, it was an idea I had, but truly this was catalyzed by, or an insight I had, it was truly catalyzed by an artist couple's work, actually called The Poverty Line. It's a couple based in Beijing. They've been doing research around the world for over 10 years around poverty, and they came up with an amazing way of portraying the differences of poverty between different countries and societies. And basically, through a series of conversations, we agreed that this is an important moment to potentially push that that art piece or the message further. And this, quite frankly, what we're definitely not doing, if this becomes an actual project, this is not going to a poverty porn, production. It is more about highlighting the fact that poverty is everywhere, not only in, Central Africa, but in all countries around the world. And it has different faces, and it's mostly invisible, or is actually the most dangerous form of poverty for the people in it, when it is invisible. So we are going a little bit deeper than normally I guess statistics and various projects go into poverty. We find it very important. That's all I can say right now. So if anyone can relate to this viewers,
that's one of the lessons that I got through the power of storytelling as well. Like you can talk in statistics. I mean, look, there's 500 million people going into poverty each year. But until you boil it down to one person at a time, you know, right, there's a guy called Tony who lives in Hong Kong, or a guy called Chris who lives in Kentucky. People can't relate to it.
Yes.
So that's what will, you know, get people to take action.
But it needs to be also very well produced and very differently, because people don't want to watch poor people. Unless they are so poor that it's in your face and it's shocking.
Yeah.
But that is poverty porn, and that's what we're not doing.
So you just reminded me of a reaction that someone got. You know, The Plastic Ocean, which is a documentary about, you know, that there is a lot of plastic in the ocean, microparticles, everything else. I had an exchange with one of the producers for that, and she had taken this idea to BBC a number of times, and they said, no one wants to watch, you know, negative news about pollution. And yet, you know, finally, through sheer determination, it was produced, and it's changed so many perspectives around the world. So I'm sure your documentary will do something similar. So.
We'll try it. It's a big undertaking.
Let me know how I can help.
Thank you.
Thanks for sharing that, Tony. Yeah, I love how you're looking at, you know, how you're looking, you know, at, you don't want to do poverty porn. You want something that's well produced, and you want something that's real. That's going to make people think. So. That's a big project, man. That's massive. I'm excited for you. I don't know how I can help either, but if I can, I'd love to. That's beautiful. Thanks for sharing that. Peter, I just was going to say, you know, I, at the end of the show or during the show, we totally need to plug your book. We haven't been doing this. Maybe next time I can. We're going to say it right now. Peter has a book called Productive Accidents. What's the full title? The story.
Yeah, I mean, it's a playbook for personal and professional adventure is basically the concept. And the origin of the idea was from a professor at business school who went back 100 years and looked at how does innovation happen. And he distilled all that research into a single phrase: put yourself at risk of productive accident. Sort of be the bridge between diverse industries. Don't just hang around your cubicle or your silo. Look beyond. And that's in a lot of ways, you know, what diversity and inclusion is trying to get a message across as well. You know, you're going to build better products if you can bring, you know, diverse experiences together and insights. And, you know, you can't come up with all the ideas yourself. You know, you're going to see something that's revolutionary or routine in another industry could be revolutionary in yours, a different business model or a different piece of technology. But my, I guess, contribution that is the more I put myself at risk of productive accidents, such as reaching out to you and starting these conversations. It's got nothing to do with my day job, but you know, that's where a lot of the magic has happened. You know, NGOs in New York and back in Hong Kong with Resolve Foundation and etc. It turns your life into this never-ending adventure where you can make contributions to causes that we all care about. And the ones that I've kind of summarized are now equality, entrepreneurship, education, the environment, empowerment, and you know, all of these things come through the projects that you're working on. The first NGO that really resonated with me was an Australian lady that went to Tanzania, and she fights poverty through education, and we've been collaborating with her. So again, the poverty message coming through, but then you bring it back to where you live, and you know, it's easy to think, oh, let's help people in Africa, but hey, what about the people in Hong Kong? And that's where I've been amazed with NGOs such as Impact Hong Kong and you know, really happy to be part of Resolve Foundation. So there's plenty of people that we can bring in and continue this conversation over time. But yeah, the book, it's an experiment in, you know, what should happen next. Here's what's happened so far. And it's been incredible how much content and experiences you can fit into Hong Kong in 10 years. We've both benefited from that. But I'm really interested in what should happen next. People might read it and they say, look, this reminds me of X, you should meet Y, have you thought about Z? And that's going to become, you know, the next version of the book. And it's just going to be this evolving adventure. And hopefully we can, you know, have an impact on some big problems along the way as well. So thanks, Chris. That's great that we can just add that in.
Yeah, for sure. And I'll make sure in the show notes, because I had you on talking about your book, because I did read your book and I did love your book. And that's part of the reason why we're collaborating on this. I just wanted to be able to I think when we do these, we need to put your book out there so people know there's a book called, you know what I mean? Just like my book's coming out next week, Dear Gratitude, an anthology that's going to come out. So I'm also want to promote that to you.
Then we just need Tony to write his book, and then we've got a book tour, you know, on tap whenever we want to go and cruise the world. And you take Gratitude, I'll take Productive Actions, Tony will take his project. And we've got a festival, we've got a film, we need maybe some music. We've got to learn how to DJ at least.
We can do
talks. We've got our own South by Southwest that can be traveling around the world. You know, so.
Well, I mean, I can do the book and also do the gratitude pop-ups. I want to do that. I want to be in the. I want to be out front getting 100%. The videos for everybody. You know, so this has been great, guys.
Hong Kong, we'll do version 0.0 of this platform.
0.001.
Absolutely, yeah. Thanks a lot, Chris. This is awesome.
Chris, this has been amazing. Yeah. Thank you for making our Saturday morning so much more meaningful.
Yeah, definitely.
Thanks for that tea and the good conversation. And wonderful stories. And grateful fool.
Thank you, Sim.
You're welcome. Well, I'm
that could be a book title, Grateful Fool.
Grateful Fool. Well, great, guys. I'm going to close this out.
What is the title of your book, by the way?
It's called Dear Gratitude, an Anthology. It's called Dear Gratitude, an Anthology. Wow. So it tells a little bit of my story, and then it has 68 essays and letters in it of people sharing gratitude. So, because all I want to do is initiate people to share gratitude, the book is a complete success just because the people wrote for it. So I've been building the Kindle the last few days myself. I wrote Peter about that because I was having a headache. It's okay though. It's almost done. Like tomorrow, the digital will be done. It's going to be up next week for Thanksgiving. I got my, I got my wedding. I got my book release, and I got Thanksgiving. So it's a big, amazing. It's a big week. And Peter's book was Productive Actions. My book's going to initiate other people to share what they're grateful for. So my book's going to be a catalyst for more stories and more gratitude to be shared. So, I'm super excited, super excited. So I'll close this out real quick. Thanks, man. Thanks, Tony. Well, Peter, Tony, I'm Chris. And just remind everybody to, you got a lot to be grateful for. And just kind of take a moment, take a breath, attempt to be present, pay attention, and you'll find a few things you'll have to be grateful for. So everybody have a wonderful day, and thanks for staying with us.
This is an open call to anyone that has a gratitude story or practice that they'd like to share. Just email me at the address hello@gratitudespace.com. That link will be in the show notes. If you've enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe and rate us. You could look at this as a way of showing me a little gratitude. Just a friendly suggestion. Thank you for tuning in to Gratitude Space Radio, and we're out.